Isn't it interesting, as we look through the Bible, how much of what is revealed to us is done so in stories? Now, first we need to talk about what we mean when we say story. Well, I don't know if people still do this, but when I was growing up, my mother would say, don't tell stories, which means they don't lie. Okay. Stories can be true, and they can be false. Stories can, there's both of those in the Bible, okay? Stories can really happen, and stories can be made up, and there's both of those in the Bible. There's even a few lies in the Bible, but we're not talking about stories, just things that are made up, okay? Well, in fact, we're talking for the most part about things that really happened. We sing a song, Tell Me the Old, Old Story. If you look at culture, okay, we find that much of our culture, just take the Iliad by Homer, okay, came from stories. Stories that were told around campfires before people could write, they kept the stories going by telling them. We saw the movie, it was The Tip of the Spear, End of the Spear, and the protagonist there, before he came to Christianity, says, the old people told us this. I think that was when he said you need to bury a daughter or a son with you when you die. So it wasn't a real good story, was it? But they kept stories. They had no concept of what writing was. Okay, they kept stories. And so stories are very important to us. And the Bible tells us stories. We learn by stories. What would history be like if you couldn't mention guys and gals? I guess we would call it geology. I don't know. You know, we'd have to think of something else. It's a story of people and what they do, and we learn from it, don't we? Hopefully, sometimes we learn from what we do. Okay, our own stories. So today I want to talk to you about three stories in the Bible. The first story is from the Old Testament. It's David and Jonathan. David, of course, was the type of Christ. Okay, Christ was the Messiah, the anointed one, the son of David. But as David was coming up, you know, he wasn't born to be a king. Okay, Saul had become king, and for many reasons God had given up on Saul, but Saul had a son, Jonathan, and if you read in the Old Testament, I think you'll find no more virtuous person than Jonathan. In fact, I say he was probably more virtuous than David. Okay, although because he was Saul's son, he met a tragic end, whereas David did not. David became ingratiated to Saul, beginning with his slaying of Goliath, and then he became something of a war leader, David was many things. One of the most, you know, you talk about a Renaissance man, well, 2,000 years before the Renaissance, let me work that out, more than that, 2,500 years, so it was David, the great poet, the great builder, okay, the great economic guy, and the great war leader, okay? The great war leader. He probably invented guerrilla warfare, or if not, he took it to new heights. And David became a war leader in Saul's army, and one of the problems was he was so good at it, they did things like saying, Saul has killed his thousands and David has killed his 10,000s. Some stories are also exaggerated. I don't know if those are, but you get the point, don't you? And Saul didn't like the point. And as the Lord withdrew from Saul, Saul began to blame it more and more on David. And more than one time, Saul tried to kill David with his own spear. Okay. And finally, David had to flee from Saul. And our story today is at the last part of that story, where David is fleeing from Saul. Saul has decided to kill David, and Jonathan, being the crown prince, I guess we would call him, knows about it and tries to intercede for David, and David flees. Okay. Saul sends soldiers to David's house, David's wife warns him, "You women, you need to get this story." Okay, he gets out of away and he goes off, and Jonathan goes through a process because of his friendship to try to bring David back into Saul's good grace. Okay. And it's not clear totally as we read the story how honest Saul is about it, but Jonathan finally realizes that he's pretty sure that Saul, his father's not going to do anything but kill David. And they have a new moon festival, and David doesn't show up. Okay, he was is one of Saul's commanders. He was supposed to be there. They gave him one day. The second day, he didn't show up, and Saul begins to question him, and Jonathan realizes, and he goes to David. And he says to him, one, they make a pact, okay? Says that each of them, they seem to have both understood somehow that this was going to end badly, okay? End with bloodshed, okay? And it did, okay? And so they made a pact that each of them would look after the other's families, okay? And it's interesting to note that Jonathan is the crown prince, seems to understand that David is going to be king and that his father can't be king anymore. And that's unusual, isn't it? Well, okay. And so Jonathan says, let's give this one more chance. I'm paraphrasing here. I'll go find out. Okay. You know, I'll go find out. And David is hiding outside the camp. He's afraid to come in. You know, David was many things. One of them was smart. Okay. How many times do you need a spear thrown at you before you kind of figure things out? Okay. And so they come up with this plan where Jonathan will signal to David whether it's safe for him to come back, because Saul kind of went up and down. He got hot and cold. You know, the evil spirit of the Lord was on him sometimes, and sometimes it was not. So we'll find out, David, if you can come back or if we're going to be apart forever. Okay. If this break is going to take place. Now, we know how the story goes. We know that David leaves, that he becomes a guerrilla warfare, that he goes to the Philistines, Israel's enemies, for a while, that he fights Saul. Twice he ends up in a position to kill Saul during warfare and doesn't do it. Saul, you know, killing him in his sleep. Okay. He refuses to do it. David has so much respect for the Lord's anointed, as he called it. Later, when Saul dies, he kills the man who claims to have killed Saul. Okay. He takes the town that buries Saul's body and praises him for it. Okay. So there's a lot of good guy stuff going on here. But here's the interesting part of the story. They come up with a plan. Now, I can kind of look out that window and I can see bushes out there. Okay, and so we're the camp, and David is out there hiding in a pile of rocks. Okay, and Jonathan comes up with a story how he will signal. Let's just read it. And in the morning, Jonathan went out into the field to the appointment with David, and with him a little boy. Now, they had come up with this plan. Jonathan says, I'll come out, and I'll kind of do a little archery practice. Okay, and I'll shoot my arrows, and I'll have this boy. And arrows are valuable. I don't want to get rid of them. So I'll send him out to get the arrows. Now, if I tell him when he's out there, look back this way, that means it's safe for you. You can come in. But if I tell him, look farther, that means it's not safe. So they've got this signal set up. Okay. And he said to his boy, run and find the arrows that I shoot. And the boy ran. And he shot an arrow beyond him. So here we are. Here's Jonathan. Well, I guess he's out in the yard there. And he shoots the arrow over the boy's head. Don't do that anymore. I think Child Protective Services will get you. Okay. Different times. Okay. Different times. All right. And then, as the boy he's ran, he shot an arrow beyond him. And when the boy had come to the place of where the arrow that Jonathan had shot, Jonathan called out to the boy and says, is it not beyond you? So the arrow's out there, and the boy evidently can't see it, but he's in the right location. And he says, no, search on farther. Search on farther. Okay. And Jonathan called after the boy, hurry, be quick, don't stray. And so Jonathan's boy gathered up the arrows and came to his master, but the boy knew nothing. Now, I want you to remember that statement. Okay. There's two or three things you need to remember here. All righty. There's going to be a test at the end. Okay, all right. But the boy knew nothing, and only Jonathan and David knew the matter. And Jonathan gave him his weapons to the boy and said to him, go and carry them into the city. In other words, go back into the camp. Okay, here, take my bow, take my arrows, take my whatever stuff they had, and go on back. And we're out in the field, and there's just Jonathan and David hiding in the rocks and the bushes. And as soon as the boy had gone, David rose from beside the stone heap and fell on his face to the ground and bowed three times. Isn't that interesting? You know, David has already been anointed at this time. Samuel has secretly come and anointed him. That was an act of treason, by the way. Okay, you go anointing somebody else while the king is still alive, you're putting your life in your hands. But the Lord had told him to do it. And you remember the story, he went to Jesse, and he asked for his sons, and took the oldest, no, not him, the second oldest, no, not him, and finally went through all the sons. He says, don't you have another one? And I said, well, I got little David out in the field watching the sheep, but you know, surely you don't want him. And that was the Lord's anointing. So this is all taking place. But David comes and bows three times to his friend because he's the crown prince. Okay. David continued to respect the Lord's anointing and the Lord's kingship. Okay. And they kissed one another and wept with one another, David weeping the most. They seem to have certainly understood that this was it. We're just not going to see each other again. And we know it's not long till both Saul and Jonathan are killed in battle by the Philistines, okay, in a single day. Okay, so, and David weeping the most, and Jonathan says to David, go in peace, because we have sworn both of us in the name of the Lord, saying, the Lord shall be between me and you, and between my offspring and your offspring forever. And he rose and departed, and Jonathan went into the city. We can get a lot from this story. Have you ever had somebody who moved away? Kind of what's going on. You know, I read in my family, we have a letter from Virginia. When the family was still in Virginia before they moved to Tennessee, before they moved to Louisiana, before they moved to Texas. Okay, and the letter is from the father to the son. And basically it says, I really think you need to come home and pay the $20 you owe. But they didn't see each other, and he didn't come back. And people left, they were gone. I remember when we lived in England. We lived in the same place almost 5 years, and we all got all packed up from our house in the little village, and Bethany was 9 years old at the time. And she was playing, you know, and kids don't help you packing, they're playing, and we're getting ready, and we're getting ready to go, and we're leaving. We're getting in the car, and two of her friends were down the street, lived three doors down. She said, don't you want to go say goodbye? And she went and, yeah, I need to. You know, nine-year-olds don't understand this, but we understood it, you know. We're not coming. They live in England permanently, and we're not coming back. Well, we came back about 5 years later, and they had moved. And she went down and said goodbye and came back, and I just broke out crying. Didn't bother Bethany. They were her friends, but it bothered me. Okay, it bothered me. We understand that. Number two, what a great picture of friendship. You know, Jesus said to his disciples, you're my friends. And we don't think that is a messianic kind of a thing, do we? We think that is a personal kind of thing, but it goes all the way back to David, doesn't it? Okay. There's something of David in Christ, isn't there? Okay. Some kind of connection there. And what a great thing. And then, of course, Jonathan, who understood the will of the Lord, even when the will of the Lord wasn't going to do him any good. Even when he was going to come out on the short end of the stick. Okay. What a great, great story. The second story we have today is from John, the sixth chapter. We now move from the type of Christ to the anti-type, or the Christ. And it's a story we all know. It's a miracle. By the way, it's the only miracle, i.e. the only sign, that Jesus does is mentioned in all four Gospels. It's the feeding of the 5,000. And after this, Jesus went away to the other side of the Sea of Galilee, which is the Sea of Tiberias, and a large crowd was following him because they saw the signs that he was doing on the sick. And Jesus went up on the mountain, and there he sat down with his disciples. Now the Passover, the feast of the Jews, was at hand. And lifting up his eyes, then, and seeing that the large crowd was coming toward him, he said to Philip, where are we to buy bread so that these people may eat? And he said this to test them, for he himself knew what he would do. It's interesting, the other three Gospels don't have that exact way of saying. In fact, they seem to say the concept of we got to feed these people comes from the disciples. In other words, what, we've got a logistics problem here, Lord, what are we going to do about it? Okay. So Jesus says, you know, what are you going to do? Okay. And Philip answered him, 200 denarii, that's a lot of money, okay, would not buy enough bread for each of them to eat it. And one of his disciples, Andrew, Simon Peter's brother, said to him, there is a boy here who has 5 barley loaves and 2 fishes, but what are they for so many? Andrew seems to be saying, you know, we can't put on a banquet here, okay? We don't have the stuff to do it with. We don't have the food. Yeah, we got this boy. It kind of, we read between the lines, it's kind of like Andrew saying, I ain't got any food. Okay. You know, Philip saying, I haven't got any food. Jesus, we know you don't have any food. Well, we got this little boy, and he's got 5 loaves, and I don't know how big the loaves are, but, you know, we think of a loaf as something this big, maybe a little bit, and 2 fish. Okay. And what are they for so many? And then you know the story, don't you? Oops. Little help. And Jesus feeds them. He takes the loaves and the fishes and he feeds them with them. And everybody gets enough to eat. In fact, there's plenty of leftovers. I got to tell you, I can visualize in my mind the water to wine. You know what happens in the barrel, in the casks, the urns that they have the wine in. You know, I can visualize Lazarus come out of the grave. You know, we can kind of understand that. We can see what that looks like. I can't see what this one looks like. I mean, were there 5 loaves last here and they passed by and when he gave one, it became 5 more? And the 2 fishes, you know, I don't know how much does a person get a fish themselves? Maybe they were bigger fish than that, so it was divided among 3 people, but he fed them all. He took his little boy's food and fed them all. And it shows us 2 things about Jesus, doesn't it? One, he was interested in the needs of people. Okay? He was interested in the needs of people. And number 2, he was interested in making a point. Because it's not many more verses in John chapter 6 till he would come to this statement. I am the bread of life. Okay. When we read that, our tendency is to read that talking about the Lord's Supper. I don't think it has anything to do with the Lord's Supper. And when he says you're going to eat my flesh, what he's saying is you're going to partake of me. You're going to be part of me. You are going to accept me. Okay, just like you accept this bread. I fed my dogs this morning some stale bread. Cindy's not here, but the bread she brings doesn't last as long as the bread we buy in a regular grocery store. Have y'all noticed that? And it turned all kind of white and moldy. And about 3 days of white and moldy bread, I say it's probably getting unsafe here. All right, I'm sorry, ladies. I threw it away as soon as I saw the white and moldy part on it. It wasn't an easy decision because it's pretty good bread. I thought, what if you toast bread, does that kill the mold? No, I guess not. You know, and I fed the bread to the dogs, you know, and they loved it. They ate it, put a little dog food on top of it, had a little milk left over from the cereal, and they thought it was great. You know, I'm not sure why dogs are better at this than we are, but I guess they are. But, you know, that bread came from me, and this bread came from Jesus. Okay, and it speaks down to us through the ages. And now as we come to the end of the lesson, we have to ask, what's the problem? Anybody notice the problem yet? You weren't listening, were you? She actually put it up twice. Oh, I got somebody. Are you signaling? Say it loudly. I have, haven't I? I promised 3 stories, didn't I? 1 story from the Old Testament, 1 story from the New Testament. You can look ahead. I ain't got another slide, have I? Flip it. There. What's the third story? Okay. What's the third story that we can learn from? First story written thousands of years ago. Second story written down 500 or 600 years later. The third story hasn't been written yet. Or maybe I should say it's being written right now, because it's your story. Okay. What is your story? Not the one that we make up about ourselves. Not the one that we believe about ourselves. Not the tall tales that we tell around the campfire of the great things that we have done. What's your real story? And as you try to answer that, I have to ask the second question of the test. What was the same in both those stories? Come on, the dog ate my homework is not an excuse. I wasn't listening is not an excuse, and I had a short nap is not an excuse. What was the same in both those stories? A boy. There was a boy in both those stories. I even emphasized the first one. Okay. First boy, what was his job? Go get the arrows and get out of the way. Second boy, what was his job? How did he fit into the story? What did he do in the story? I guess we'd say he primed the pump. You know, he brought the initial loaves and fishes that the Lord turned into a great bounty. What was the first boy's name? Who was his daddy? We don't know. Second boy, what town was he from? I guess we would think he was Jewish. We don't know anything about these boys except they're in the story. They're part of the story. You don't have to be David to be part of David's story. You don't have to be Philip or Andrew or even Jesus to be part of Jesus' story. So what's your story? Maybe you'll be a David or a Jonathan. Maybe you'll be an Andrew or a Philip. Or maybe you'll just be the boy who's off to the side, who makes things happen, who is part of the process of God has of telling His story to people. It doesn't really matter, does it? What really matters is, what story will you tell? Now, what am I getting at here? If you're a parent, you're telling a story to your children. If you're a teacher, you're telling a story to your school kids. If you're a boss or a co-worker, you're telling a story to the people you boss or co-worker or work with. We all tell a story, and the people around us see it. Now, we may not get our story written down. I'll admit that. Okay. Sometimes stories just are for the present time and everybody forgets about them. Okay. Okay. But still, there are stories which have effect on people. There are true stories and there are false stories. There are real stories and there are made up stories, but all the stories affect other people. Okay. They all affect other people. So ask yourself now, because it's really not the third story, is it? I'd have to count the number of people here, but have we got a count yet? 55. Did you count me in that? Did I get in that? Okay. All right. So 56. No, 55 stories out here. 55 stories which can be just as effective in telling the old story of Jesus. Just as effective, Paul has got us a new song called Ancient Words. Kind of interesting, a new song called Ancient Words. Okay, just as effective as the Ancient Words. Because see, one of the problems the church has today is the only story we are telling sometimes is written in the Bible, and we're not telling the story written in the Bible, written in our hearts, communicated. communicated to people. Okay, so David, Jesus, you. Don't have to be the apostle. Can be the little boy. Don't have to be the main protagonist. Don't have to be the Messiah. Don't have to be the anointed one. Don't have to be the son of the king. Don't have to be any of these things. But just tell the story. And we finally end with this: how do we tell the story? I love to tell the old story of unseen things above. Well, one is by telling it, isn't it? Okay. But the other is by living it. Because you see, that's what happens in the Bible. Genesis, full of stories. Exodus, full of stories. Leviticus, Numbers, Deuteronomy. Joshua, full of stories. Judges, full of stories. Ruth, what a great story. Samuel, stories, stories. Kings, stories, stories. Chronicles. Ezra, Nehemiah, Esther. Job, Psalms. Okay, we go. But you get where we're going. Matthew, Mark, Luke, John, Acts, stories. Okay, what are our stories? Because people are not going to believe in our religion till they, one, realize that we believe in it, and number two, they realize that it's worth believing in. Okay? To too many people today, religion is just some old thing that takes place in big old buildings. Okay? And it is not what people see in religious people's deeds, their attitudes, their thoughts, their minds, their relationships. Everything fits together, tied together in religion. You know, Paul said, I resolved to only know Christ and Him crucified. When you looked at Paul, you looked at Christ, because that's all he cared about. The rest of it is whatever you need me to be. But Christ was there. So ask yourself tonight, not whether I'm going to tell a story, because you are. Okay. You're going to tell a story. But what is the story I am going to tell? Thank you.